This is Jeff Blankford, welcoming you to the February 25th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Today, I'll be taking another look at what appears to be the biggest crisis in U.S.-Israel relations since the state was founded, and I'm doing that because it has been largely ignored by the U.S. media while being the hottest topic in the Israeli and American Jewish press. Whether or not the U.S. will initiate another war in the Middle East with Iran may hang in the balance. In late November 1988, a cartoon by Signe Wilkerson of the Capitol Building in Washington appeared on the editorial page of the Philadelphia Daily News. Beneath it, the caption read, "Israeli Occupied Territory." Published on the eve of the first anniversary of the Intifada, it portrayed prophetically the most difficult obstacle that the Palestinians would face and which, without help from their American supporters, they would be unable to overcome. That's the Congress of the United States. It was a disturbing image, yet it accurately represented the degree to which Congress is enthralled to Israel's supporters in the United States. 1988 was a year in which Palestinian resistance to Israeli occupation was reported with unprecedented sympathy by the mainstream U.S. media, and it was not uncommon to see cartoons of Israeli soldiers beating or shooting Palestinians with captions reading, quote, "Your tax dollars at work." With but a handful of exceptions, too few in number to be meaningful, this attitude was not reflected in the halls of Congress where those tax dollars were approved. The images of Israeli violence against Palestinian civilians on the nightly network news would prove no match for the demands of the occupiers that the lawmakers on both sides of the aisle raise in Israel's defense. Well, those were the opening lines for an article I wrote in 1991 for publication in Lawrence Ferlinghetti's 1992 City Lights Annual Review, War Against War, entitled "Occupied Territory, Congress, the Lobby, and Jewish Responsibility." What those lines of Signe Wilkerson's cartoon conveyed then about the Israel lobby's power over Congress is no less true today than it was then, although current events have made it more transparent for those willing to open their eyes. President Obama, I suspect, would be the first to attest to that. Well, next Tuesday, for the second time in 4 years, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will address a joint session of Congress, during which, as he has publicly announced, he will attempt to sabotage the efforts of Obama and the members of the UN Security Council, plus Germany, to conclude an agreement with Iran that would reduce the size of its nuclear enrichment program to the point that it would be unable to build a nuclear weapon in the foreseeable future. The last time Netanyahu spoke to Congress was in March of 2011, just 3 days after he addressed down the American president as if he was an errant schoolboy. On that day, ignoring the insults to that president, members of both houses gave Netanyahu 29 standing ovations, beginning with the moment he stepped into the House chamber. That alone would seem to have justified what the Israeli prime minister said to a small gathering of Israelis in 2001. "I know what America is," Netanyahu told the group, apparently not knowing his words were being recorded. "America is a thing you can move very easily. Move it in the right direction. They won't get in the way," end quote. Netanyahu's extraordinary declaration never got beyond the blog of the Washington Post's political correspondent and the Huffington Post and roused not a public peep from any member of Congress. To explain how Netanyahu and other Israeli governments that preceded him have been able to move America to its liking, to their liking, and do so for decades, will be Grant Smith, my guest at 20 minutes past the hour. A frequent guest on Takes on the World, Grant is the executive director of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, or IRMEP, and the foremost authority on the history of the Israeli lobby and the chicanery that has been Israel's hallmark in its dealing with the United States going back to 1948. The comments of Netanyahu, which I cited, that included his admitting to having sabotaged the Oslo Accords, were made in a visit to a private home in Israel. But the video did not surface until 2010, when it ran on Israeli TV, and shortly thereafter on YouTube, where you could find it, it's still available. The most recent controversy was cooked up by House Speaker John Boehner and a former GOP operative from Florida, Ron Dermer, who gave up his U.S. citizenship to become Israel's ambassador to the U.S. in 2014. Dermer replaced Michael Oren, another Jewish American who had also chosen to tear up his U.S. passport and go to work for Israel in Washington. What caused the biggest stir was that Netanyahu's visit was arranged by John Boehner and Dermer without informing either the White House or the State Department, which, if nothing else, is a violation of diplomatic norms. It also comes 2 weeks before Israel's hotly contested national elections, which provided an excuse for a visibly angry Obama to declare that neither he nor anyone from the White House would meet with Netanyahu on the basis that it would appear he was endorsing his reelection when it's clear that is the last thing Obama wants. Netanyahu's speech to Congress was intended to take advantage of his presence at the annual policy conference of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is the biggest yearly event in the nation's capital. In addition to 14,000 AIPAC members and guests who attend the conference, will be anywhere between one-half to two-thirds of the members of Congress. In a very dramatic fashion, their attendance will be noted by the reading of their names as if they were on an honor roll. Of course, in a sense, they are. Those attending expect to be honored and rewarded financially in the upcoming election season for their willingness to put the interest of Tel Aviv before those of the American people. Nothing remotely like this shameless event takes place any other place in the world. It succeeds largely because the national media, including the alternative variety from The Nation magazine to Democracy Now!, have kept the American people in the dark about the congressional presence at the conference if they bother mentioning the meeting at all. Almost all the reporting on the present controversy has appeared in Israel and the country's Jewish press, where the more liberal commentators question the wisdom of Israeli Prime Minister going out of his way to embarrass an American president, while the right wing does not hide its anti-administration sentiments. Several important Jewish organizations in the United States, uneasy about the clash between the leaders of both countries, joined the call of a number of congressional Democrats that Netanyahu not cancel the speech but reschedule it until after the Israeli elections. But it was to no avail. The final numbers are not yet in, chortled the New York-based Jewish weekly Allgemeiner, but it seems clear that the White House orchestrated campaign to boycott Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to Congress is collapsing. Despite 2 weeks of intense anti-Netanyahu leaks, insults, and pressure, if read, the White House has so far succeeded in persuading only a handful of Democratic members of Congress to stay away from the speech, wrote Benjamin Korn and Moshe Phillips. As of a week ago, the paper reported, a grand total of 2 senators and 12 representatives have publicly announced that they are boycotting Israel's prime minister. Assuming that those figures change only marginally in the days ahead, it will mean that 98% of the Senate and 95% of the House of Representatives will be in attendance. There has been considerable attention paid to the stance of the Congressional Black Caucus, whose members are heavily reliant on contributions from Jewish donors. Early on, former civil rights activist but a committed supporter of Israel, Atlanta's John Lewis, announced he would not attend the joint session, as did New Jersey's Cory Booker, the only black member of the Senate. But Booker, who was a strong supporter of Israel as mayor of Newark before being elected to the Senate, apparently succumbed to the pressure from Jewish donors and is expected to attend. On my February 11th program, I quoted a strong statement by a representative, Jared Huffman, criticizing the manipulation behind the Netanyahu invitation, but it wasn't clear then whether or not he'd be attending the joint session. On Monday, he responded to a query from me saying he would be attending, and he said, quote, I considered my job to attend sessions of Congress. So I'll be in the chamber when Prime Minister Netanyahu speaks, just as I have been there when other heads of states addressed us. I respect that some of my colleagues feel differently about the need to attend. Each member has to decide that for themselves. Whether we attend the speech or not, I expect many of my colleagues to come together the day of the speech for a press conference where we will express our common objections and concerns about how this event was orchestrated by Speaker Boehner and Ambassador Dermer. End quote from Jared Huffman. I also asked him if he planned to attend the AIPAC conference, to which he replied that, quote, it is not currently on my schedule, end quote. In the Senate, only Vermont's Patrick Leahy and Bernie Sanders have said they will boycott the event. They will be joined in their absence by Vice President Joe Biden, a self-proclaimed Zionist who is forsaking the Vice President's traditional role of presiding over the Senate and who will be traveling to parts of the world yet to be specified, and Secretary of State John Kerry, who yesterday slammed Netanyahu for criticizing an agreement with Iran that Kerry says he knows little about. Speaking at a congressional hearing in the State Department budget, Kerry said that, quote, anybody running around right now jumping in to say, well, we don't like it, we don't like the deal, or this or that, doesn't know what the deal is. There is no deal yet, Kerry said, and I caution people to wait and see what these negotiations produce, end quote. Kerry's comments came shortly after the Israeli prime minister again attacked the deal with Iran. Said Netanyahu, unfortunately, the information that I have received over the last few days confirms many of our fears. This agreement, if signed, he said, will allow Iran to become a nuclear threshold state, meaning, with the power's consent, Iran will get a license to develop bombs, and this is a country which openly declares its intention to destroy the state of Israel, end quote. That is why I will go to Washington to speak before the U.S. Congress, he said once again, because the U.S. Congress may be the last defense before an agreement between the powers and Iran, end quote. For years, Netanyahu has been warning the world that the Iran bomb is only months away from developing, Iran is only months away from developing an atomic bomb. He does this despite being informed by his intelligence services that it ain't so. His famous claim at the UN 3 years ago that Iran was within close reach of possessing a nuclear bomb was denied by his government's own spy agency, Mossad. A top-secret document obtained by Al Jazeera and the Guardian of London reveals. In a September 2012 address to the United Nations General Assembly in New York, Netanyahu, with a cartoon claim of a bomb, claimed that Iran was 90% down the road to developing an atomic weapon and would do so within the year. That was 2012. By next spring, he said, at most by next summer. At current enrichment rates, they will have finished the medium enrichment and move on to the final stage, he stated. The leaked internal documents paint a much different picture. On October 22, 2012, less than a month after Netanyahu's speech, Mossad sent a classified assessment to South Africa, stating that Iran was, quote, not performing the activity necessary to produce weapons, and, quote, doesn't appear to be ready to enrich uranium to the higher levels needed for a nuclear bomb, end quote. The truth doesn't matter to Netanyahu or his U.S. supporters. Their campaign to destroy the negotiations with Iran and put the U.S. once again on a war footing on Israel's behalf has not missed a thing, from authorizing clearly stacked public polls to ads in major newspapers, the latest featuring Holocaust victim and profiteer Elie Wiesel in a full-page advertisement in the New York Times and Washington Post, sponsored by the ultra-right, quote, This World, The Values Network, end quote. Wiesel, who has defended Israel's bloody invasions of Lebanon and assaults on Gaza without so much as a hint of criticism, announced that he will attend Netanyahu's speech. He appealed to President Obama and Vice President Biden to, quote, put aside the politics and hear what Israel's prime minister has to say, as if they didn't already know it in spades. There was one supporter of Israel who was very worried about the fallout from the Netanyahu-Obama confrontation. The ongoing dispute between Obama and Netanyahu may have long-term consequences that could harm the future of the State of Israel, pollster and Republican political consultant Frank Luntz warned Monday in Jerusalem. Luntz, who has monitored Israel's image on American college campuses for 13 years, told the Jerusalem Post that the American people support Israel's policies, especially on Iran, well, it's questionable, but not the style by which they are being communicated in the United States. He said the pressure Israel is placing on the U.S. government is hurting not only Israeli-American relations, but also Israel's future support in the United States. The Israeli government and elites need to understand that the growing division between them could have horrific consequences on what Americans think of Israel, Leary warned. We may not be able to count on the next generation of American leaders. A loss of American elite support, if it's not turned around, is a real possibility going forward, end quote. Well, Congress isn't the only American institution occupied by Israel. The U.S. federal court in New York is equally compromised. On Monday, a Manhattan jury ordered the PLO and the Palestinian Authority to pay more than $218 million for providing material support to terrorists, a victory for American Jews suing over attacks in the Jerusalem area more than a decade ago. Jurors found in favor of 10 families suing over six attacks attributed to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade and Hamas. The award could be tripled to more than $600 million under the U.S. Anti-Terrorism Act, which was apparently written to benefit American Jews who had immigrated to Israel and became dual citizens. Victims and their families had requested more than $350 million, or over $1 billion after tripling, stemming from shootings and bombings from 2000 to 2004 that killed 33 people and injured over 450. More than 3,000 Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces during the same period with weapons provided by the United States, but there's no law that reimburses them. Well, now the PLO and the Palestinian Authority know there's a price for supporting terrorism, said Nitzan Adashim Leitner, a lawyer for the plaintiffs, in an interview after the verdict. Well, the PLO and the Palestinian Authority, which are in no position to pay, are expected to appeal the verdict, but is likely to have an influence on Congress, which is eager to cut off aid to the Palestinian Authority. Israeli-occupied Congress, it certainly is.